Go to Vegas right now, and as we do each and every weekday morning at this time, speak with Pierre McGuire. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Excellent, JR. Good morning. Hello, Sean.
Good morning, Pierre.
And did you spend the entire day, Pierre, locked into your 29th floor room?
Yes, I did, yeah. Except when I went for my COVID test.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, all right. What are you doing to pass the time?
Reading a lot, watching a lot of tape, trying to get ready, you know, to watch different things in the game, but being in touch with our team, our producers, trying to create storylines, things like that. So, yeah. And then watch the game. So the game started here yesterday at 5 p.m. our time in the Pacific time zone. So that was good. That was a good relief.
Also, a nice chance to scan through the room service and make decisions on your three square meals each day.
That's funny. That's good. Yeah.
No, I'm being honest. Give us a little breakdown of what the appetite looked like yesterday.
There's not a lot available on the room service menu
okay,
here.
Okay.
So it's either chicken, beef, or pasta. There are three opportunities. That's it.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's get to the game then. We'll start with the game last night before we set up tonight's Montreal game. A 4-2 Tampa win, as we said. Just an overall thought on why you thought the Lightning were able to even the series with the victory last night.
That might be the most complete game they played the entire playoff, gentlemen. I mean that. They were solid. They played aggressive. Obviously, the Islanders can't be taking five penalties in a game. I talked to you guys about that before the series even started. The truth is that if they're taking two or more penalties per game, it's a problem. Two is perfect. If you take two, you're going to be fine. If you take over two, it's going to be a problem. They took five. You know, that was a problem in terms of momentum. They're always on their heels rather than on their toes because the Tampa power play is so good. Vasilevsky was great when he had to be. There were a couple saves, especially against Beauvillier near the end of the first period against Brock Nelson. There were a couple saves he made that were really, really special. And then obviously getting goals from their defense, talking about Tampa, you get one from Ruda, you get one from Hedman, and all of a sudden your team's a lot better. So I thought Tampa played a really smart game. I didn't think the Islanders were as smart. I didn't think their puck management was as good. And, you know, hey, they deserve to win, talking about Tampa. They definitely deserve to win.
Remove the physicality, Pierre. When it starts to get emotional and undisciplined, does that actually favor Tampa Bay? Because, as you said, it'll lead to some bad penalties by either team.
Yeah, the one thing, and I'm sure Barry will make an adjustment on it. I don't think he's very happy with some of the calls, but that was his own team's fault. It wasn't the official's fault. But I think they'll just try to keep it more between the whistles rather than the post-whistle stuff. That's where I think they get themselves into a little bit of trouble. But I think, again, you look at it, there was an emotional game. It always is. And they just have to control their emotions a little bit better. And I think they will when they get back to Uniondale.
I understand that you want to stick up for yourself and, you know, physically say, we're right there. We're right there in the fight. But is Tampa, and I realize they won last night, but are they not playing into the Islanders game by getting into these, agreeing to get into all these skirmishes, which started in the first whistle and went right to the final whistle of the game?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's kind of like Montreal the other night here in Game 1. That plays into Vegas' strength, not Montreal's strength. They just got to stay out of it, play whistle to whistle. That's what we talked about the other day after Game 1. It's the same thing with Tampa. But I'd say for the Islanders, it's really important that they not take penalties. We've talked about going into this series, I can tell you, I know both teams really well. That was the one thing. If the Islanders were going to win it, they had to be so disciplined when it came to penalties. And Tampa, they don't care. They can go out there and freelance. What they needed to do was manage the puck better and play less reckless hockey. Last night, they managed the puck a ton better, and they played less reckless hockey, and that's why they won pretty comfortably.
Kucherov now 22 points in the playoffs, 7 up on MacKinnon. Has he got better and better with every series, or did you think from the series one he had not missed a beat after missing the entire regular season?
Yeah, I didn't think he missed very much of a beat. I mean, he's just been so consistent. His creativity is phenomenal. His power play presence is phenomenal. And I think the biggest thing is he can make something out of nothing. There are not a lot of guys that are Houdini in this league. He's Houdini. And you can envelop him in the corner, and all of a sudden the puck's either tape to tape, beautiful pass for one timer, or he escapes. He's got amazing escapability, I guess is the best way to describe him. And because of that, he looks really, really fluid, and he makes the players around him better.
Goals in 5 straight games for Braden Point. He leads the NHL with 10 goals in the playoffs. What makes him so good?
his skating's improved so much since he was a third round pick at Tampa. That was an Al Murray special. You know, as a kid, there was a good player in Moose Jaw, but nobody ever thought he was really going to make it because he was a little bit undersized and didn't have very good skating ability. His skating has just gone to a super elite level, number one. Number two, his creativity around the net is outstanding. He can make something out of nothing in terms of finishing plays, not just being a playmaker, but finishing plays. And he's got a heart and soul that is gigantic. He just wants to continually prove people wrong. And he does. He's fantastic. But I think the biggest thing that happened for him is his skating went to another level, another notch up. And it's just, again, when you watch him play, you're like, whoa, this guy's fast. But you know, until you're there in the building, you don't realize how fast he is.
Thoughts on the call on him getting crest-checked into Varlamov and Varlamov being taken out of the game?
Yeah, it shouldn't have been a penalty, in my opinion. Dan O'Rourke and Francois St. Laurent did that game last night. I didn't agree with the call at all. I thought Pellick pushed the point into Varlamov. And the good news is Varlamov came back, but I didn't like the call at all.
It ends up being a penalty, which results in a power play, which ended up in the back of the net in 30 seconds and the game-tying goal. So it ends up being a big call. At the end, you know, at the end of the game, the Tampa did win, so it doesn't determine who wins the game. But you know, if the Islanders had to come back and won that game, it would have been a much bigger talking point. Also, the Palat goal, Pierre, was scored.
Too many men.
Seven guys on the ice, one near the bench, but clearly too many men. Would you like to see, if we have review in hockey, would you like to see, again, coaches, challenges, review, whatever it might be, expanded where you could challenge something like that?
No, what I want to see is one referee upstairs, one referee on the ice, and two linesmen, which I've been telling you for over 2 years now. I talked to an NHL executive last night because he knows my ideology on this, and he goes, the more I'm watching this, I agree with your point 100%. One referee in the press box with a headset on, one referee on the ice, two linesmen on the ice. That call will never be missed. That's an egregious miss. That's bad. That was really bad. And it wasn't six players, it was seven, and it was graphic.
How does the back linesman, because to me that's his responsibility, Pierre, your whole job is to count the players on the ice. How do you miss it?
Well, that's my point. So some things go super fast down there. We've seen it before, and calls have been missed. So rather than take the chance, streamline the official system, prolong the career of these guys, and put one person upstairs, one person on the ice, and they can rotate over the course of an 82-game schedule, you know. But I would prolong officials' careers. It'd make the system way more seamless, and more than anything else, we'd regulate the errors. Like that was a major error last night. And Ryan Gibbons and Michel Cormier were the two linesmen working in that game last night. They're both very capable, very, very capable men. But they missed it. They just missed it.
You know, and you said, well, having a referee, an eye in the sky, as it were, might. But isn't it, at the end of the day, that's a linesman call.
Like, no, referees can make that call.
Well, okay. All right. Fair enough. I have thought about, what about the idea? And it would not have had an effect on last night's call, because last night's call was the sixth guy, let alone the seventh guy, was in the middle of the ice. About the area around the players' benches, about there being something on the ice where if a player, you know, where if a player is close to the bench and within, and if you paint the ice gray in that area or whatever, you know, it isn't a penalty. Do we need something like that, or is that just creating, again, another level that we don't need, just have someone call it?
Well, I think it's a creative thought by you. There's no question it's a creative thought. I just don't think we need it. I mean, it happened once in one game, but I just think we need to streamline the whole system. Why make it more convoluted? Why make it more complicated? Let's just streamline the system. The game is, JR, I will tell you this, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I've been doing this for a long time, and I've been in the league a long time. I can't believe how fast it gets every year. It gets faster every year, and it's harder and harder for the officials. That's why I have this idea where one guy goes upstairs. It makes the guy upstairs, it's a lot slower for the guy upstairs than it is for the guy downstairs. Trust me, it would make it so much easier.
What is the issue with just having coaches, you know, for having coaches' challenges, being able to challenge something like that?
I just think that, again, I can tell you what went into the whole coaches challenge thing, because I was one of the people who helped propose the coaches challenge way, way, way back when. they wanted protocols. They want protocols and everything. I don't know. Again, we're starting to just get almost, it's like a legalese kind of a thing. Let's just streamline the whole system. It's just, it's convoluted, and it makes it just harder and harder. So, I everybody's going to have their own philosophy on it, and I respect everybody's philosophy about it, but the truth is that I think the system needs to be easier, not harder.
Well, I get all of it, and I'm against review, period, except to see whether the puck went in the net or not. That's the only thing I want, but if we've opened the door to having it for offside calls, and whether, you know, if the result of an offside call is the puck enters the net, whether it should be a goal or not, what is the difference between that and Andre Palat scoring when there's seven guys on the ice? To me, there's no difference.
Oh, it's a great point, and it's very fair, and I totally respect it, and I agree with you. I just know, but what you go through to get to, what about friendly fire, high sticks? What about pucks over the glass? I mean, so, yeah.
But those are black and white rules, Pierre. I mean, those are the so-called simple rules, right?
Well, they are, but they're not that simple, as you know.
Right. I understand. Sometimes the puck hits the netting, and they miss all that part of it. So, regardless.
So it's the same, though. That's what I'm saying. So that's, they're trying to streamline this thing. I agree with your point, by the way. I totally agree with it, but I know they want protocols and everything. It's not that easy to get it through.
Is the fear of the league having big moments, whether it be a winning goal for a series or, back to the Brett Hull, overtime in the Stanley Cup, of having replays take away from the moment?
Could be. I don't know. I haven't been in a Board of Governors meeting in a very long time, so I don't know.
All right, let's talk about your series, which resumes tonight with Game 2. Jeff Petrie, it appears, Pierre, right now is, we'll say, a game day decision. Dominique Ducharme at least opened the door to him being in. If he's able to play, what difference does that make for Montreal?
At least he'll get maybe a shot on goal from the defense. That's going to be a big thing tonight. That's for one of the big things I'll be watching for, is offense from the defense. It's not so much about getting points, but getting plays, making it more of a fluid game for the Canadiens. But Petrie can help that a lot, especially if he can jump into the rush a little bit, try to break down some of the neutral zone or in-zone coverage of Vegas. But Petrie makes a big difference. He's an elite player for their team, and he's an elite player in the league. He really is.
Really important that the Josh Andersons of the world step up and show some consistent physicality, but also start to chip in scoring-wise?
Before game one started, John Forsen asked me, what are you expecting? I said, I expect that Josh Anderson is going to be a difference maker for the Montreal Canadiens. That's why Mark Bergevin went out and got him. And if he's not a difference maker for the Montreal Canadiens, then they're going to have a big problem. He's one of the big bodies that can skate and play against a very big Vegas defense. And if he can't initiate, then it's going to be a problem. And he didn't, you know, he had two really good bursts, I thought, in game one. Really, one was in the first period. It was outstanding. He went down the left side of the ice, and he went around Zach Whitecloud, and he had an unbelievable scoring chance, and Fleury made a great left-pad save. He really did. And then he had another burst in the second period where he was outstanding and got to the front of the net and almost scored again. But they need that with consistency, you know, and if they don't get that from him, it's going to make it a harder game to win in game two, I can tell you.
Impossible to speculate if somebody's banged up, but do you think mentally, for a guy that missed almost an entire season with a shoulder injury, there might be a little bit of apprehension of playing as physical as he used to?
You know what I learned a long time ago? I don't even try to speculate on injured players. I just respect every guy that goes out on the ice, and if he's injured, he's injured, but I haven't heard that.
If Petrie can go tonight, I'm assuming his dislocated finger, fingers, whatever it is, aren't at 100%. Is it any question that Romanov then is probably the guy that comes out, or do you think that they would take out Gustafsson because Petrie could go back to the number one power play?
Or they could take out Kulak. I just don't know how I just don't know how Petrie's fingers are when it comes to shooting the puck or passing the puck. You'd have to, you know. Yeah. I'm just going to tell you how it works. You go for your COVID test, and I went when the Canes were on the ice practicing. You're not allowed in the lower bowl. You're not allowed actually in the bowl, so you can't watch. So
it's the cone of silence.
It is the cone of silence. It's just a different way to have to watch hockey, I guess, or study a series. So you got to try to do a lot of tape work. But I don't know where Petrie's injury situation is. I just don't know.
How do they handle the morning skate here and kind of your game day routine? Are you restricted at heading to the rink at certain times?
Yeah, you don't go. You can't go in the bowl.
But can you go over and watch the morning skate from the press box?
I guess you could.
Oh, okay.
I guess you can. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm more worried about getting my COVID tests every day.
Won't you be happy when those are done?
We're moving along here.
Yep. Yeah. All right. A couple of other things. This story has now been circulated a couple of times. I don't know if you've read it. Elliot Friedman wrote about it as well. Jack Capuano, assistant coach or associate coach with the Sens, according to a couple of reports, is not being allowed by the team to interview for the Buffalo Sabres head coaching job. This is consistent with how the Sens have done it in the past. But by and large, most teams, when you have an opportunity to so-called better yourself and move up, allow you to interview. What do you make of the Sens' decision to not allow Capuano to interview?
If it's in your contract and you don't have an out in your contract, then it's up to the team to decide whether they want to do it or not. Everybody's got their own organizational philosophy. I had that happen to me once in my career where I had an opportunity to go somewhere else and the team wouldn't allow me to go. That's fine. I get it. I signed the contract. That's my problem. Next time I sign a contract, put different wording in or negotiate different wording. But no, I understand the organization's philosophy, and I can understand how Jack might be a little bit ticked off. Jack's done a real good job in Ottawa. He really has. He's helped a lot. And so I respect that. I respect that from the team side, and I can also understand where Jack stands on the whole thing.
Typically, in an assistant coach's contract, would that actually be written in that you are or are not allowed to interview for other teams' head coaching jobs?
You could have a window where you could say, I'm allowed to negotiate with another team for an upward move between, let's say, June 15th and July 20th. Mm-hmm. There's always a window. Usually, not always. Usually, there's a window if you do something like that. And it's usually from when the game 7 of the Stanley Cup final, let's say the last possible date, until maybe the middle of July or the end of July, when usually most of the job openings are being filled.
Would you agree that if this was in his contract, then we wouldn't be talking about it? I mean, if he has a clause that says he can't talk to other teams, then we're not talking about it, right?
Correct.
And if you were managing the Ottawa Senators and it's pre-draft, would you allow Jack to interview with other teams to get a head coaching job?
Probably not in the division. I just don't want to. Part of what, I can just share this with you guys, and Sean, I'm sure you've gone through it. Part of these situations, I can just tell you, they're fact-finding missions for some of these teams. They have an expanded interview process with people so they can pick their brains on different situations around other organizations. And it's, you know, it's not always right. It's not always fair, but it's what happens. And so I can understand how you want to be protective of your own organization.
Yeah.
If somebody doesn't have a clause.
Yeah. And I'll also back that up because I look at Kevin Adams as a person that quite simply doesn't really know what he's doing. He's trying to learn. And to your point, he's going to try to talk to as many people as he can because he also doesn't have a staff to talk to.
Well, here's something.
No, that's the honest truth.
That's my point. That's what I'm saying. That's why I completely understand where the team is. But I'll tell you guys this right now. They got bigger fish to fry there right now. They're trying to deal with the Jack Eichel situation. They're trying to deal with the Sammy Reinhart situation. They're trying to deal with the Rasmus Ristolainen situation. And those are three major components to their organization. If all three of those guys aren't there anymore, they better not drop the ball when they make the moves. So as much as they need a head coach and interview head coaches and stuff like that, they got a lot of other issues they're going to have to deal with there.
All right, all good stuff. Okay, you got a big day ahead of you today. It is a 6 o'clock local face-off time for you?
Yes, sir, yeah. It is.
All right, enjoy the day. Enjoy the game tonight. Look forward to talking about with you tomorrow morning when you join us. Always appreciate the time, Pierre, and have a great day.
Thanks a lot, Jay. I appreciate that. Take care, Sean. Have a great day, everybody.